Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. From me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful, the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, FreedomsPhoenix.com. Now, let me tell you what we're doing today. We're just going to, you know, we're going to timestamp this point in history with one of my favorite authors, Larkin Rose. Now, Larkin's been out there, you know, let me give you a real quick intro from my perspective. There was a mini CD that was being passed out years ago that, you know, I have him correct me. It was section, you know, something ARS or IRS 861, whatever it was. He'll correct me. But it was an understanding of what the designation was for you as a wage earner and how susceptible you really were to the IRS. Well, the law says. Well, you know, they don't care what the law says. And he made that very apparent. It got to the point to where, pressing that issue, he actually served time. And then when he got out, it was his wife's turn. This was when I think that's probably when he wrote The Iron Web. You give me extra time and pen and paper, guess what's going to come out? Well, the thing is that Larkin, we got to meet up finally in person at Pork Fest this last summer, and it was a great time. We had him on the radio show live from there, and I really like his writing because he doesn't pull any punches, and he just tells it like it is in his own style with a non-violent, non-confrontational, non-aggressive manner, but that doesn't mean that you ignore the aggression that's coming against us, that's already upon us. And how do we extricate ourselves from that? It's a revolution between the ears. It's how you look at government. How do you respond to them? How do you live your life in an oppressive regime? Well, we're going to talk about that. Now, the one thing I got you there, Larkin.
Yep.
You know, Larkin, the one thing that I really, really appreciated your article on the shooting in Tucson. And the point that you were making was, you know, blah, 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 blah. The bottom line is that they always put the ruling class, if they're not serving the elite, then they are the elite. You know, they just keep elevating themselves to where they get their own special laws and such. And I did a radio show, a progressive radio station in Dallas-Fort Worth yesterday. And I refused to do. I got called by CNN and all the, you know, the Talking Point Memo guys and all the different MSNBC people. Not everybody that was trying to get hold of me for when we were here with our firearms when Obama came a year, just over a year ago. And the one thing that they wanted is they wanted to get the they wanted to get you. You know, they're always trying to get you. You know, see, yep. Guns kill people. And I'm going, nah, it didn't go. I did it live with CNN, and it didn't work out well for them. So they wanted another bite. Well, I put up an article, and I said, look, you know, you guys want to talk to me? It's live. Radio, television, live. Well, they did have a radio progressive program in Dallas, Fort Worth, and I did some research on it, so I knew where it was going to go. And, it, you know, we got to say what we said. We had a nice conversation. Then we have today Alan Corwin, the author of Arizona Gun Laws here. He does a lot of gun books, and he's always at the gun shows and so on, and he's an expert on. And they had him on CNN last night with Spitzer and whoever it was. What's her name? And it didn't go the way they wanted either. I don't think this is really panning out the way they had hoped. And what I'm afraid is that they're really, instead of focusing on the guns, I think they're really going to start focusing on free speech and the rhetoric's to blame. So I'm not seeing freedom's going to, you know, get served in this thing. But, of course, we're getting the words out. And I wanted to mention that because it was from your article that I set the tone of the entire conversation when they're talking about the 1,000-foot limit and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, man, I mean, in your mind, they're already royalty. I mean, you're already seeing them that way. Now, what I wanted to talk to you about, we got plenty of time. Me and Larkin, we're going to have some fun. We're going to go ahead and talk about this revolution going on between the ears. And in a couple of minutes that we got left in this segment, I want to talk a little bit. I know you got some other books coming out, but I want to talk about Iron Web and where that came from and the philosophy behind it. And when did you write it? So go ahead and give me your spiel on that one, man.
The Iron Web I did actually write in prison. They gave me a year, and I wrote a couple books and an album. And one of the books was The Iron Web. Some people are mistakenly under the impression that I was a good, you know, law-abiding statist until I had my run-in with the IRS, and that made me into an anarchist. And I hate to burst that, you know, fun-sounding story, but I actually, this is what I believed years before I had ever knew anything about the tax laws. But the reason for writing The Iron Web, which is a novel, it's fiction, sort of, it's about as close as you can get to the truth and still be sort of fictional. But the reason for writing it was basically, when it comes to philosophical ideas, revolution between the ears, as you call it, people aren't comfortable reconsidering fundamental assumptions about how they view the world. And so if you go up to them and say, here, I want you to completely reconsider your entire view of reality, they plug their ears and run away. But I thought, well, for ages and ages, the socialists and commies have been using Hollywood to sneak in their message inside fiction. And I thought, well, if you can sneak a lie inside fiction, sneak some truth in there instead. And so it's basically, I hope the story in and of itself is interesting and exciting and fun to read and all that. And from the response I got, apparently it is, to some people at least. But wanting to get in there, without ruining the story, the theme really is watching people go through, three characters in particular, go through a revolution between the ears, having them live through a situation and a series of events that changes how they see reality. And they come out the other end as different people than what they started. Which is, you know, none of the three main characters start out as being people I would, you know, you and I would agree with and get along with and all that philosophically. But they all, by the end, realize, wow, the way I was trained to view the world is not the way the world is.
Well, the one thing that I really wanted to emphasize is, we'll get to that. Let's go ahead and talk about my first experience with your altercation with the IRS. You know, I don't want to get into all the 15 gazillion, ouch, quit it, the law says, and, you know, they don't care what it says, so, you know, I don't care. But the what was the basis of that whole discussion that you brought to national attention? What was the one message that you got out with that?
Yeah, well, the legal basis was basically your tax laws show that income from international trade is subject to the tax, and income from an American living and working here isn't. You know, that was the legal issue. It wasn't the philosophical thing. It wasn't this is wrong, this is theft, which are all true. That just didn't have anything to do with the actual case. And their response was, shut up or we hurt you. And then they raided our house and eventually prosecuted me. And the entire trial was make sure he isn't allowed to say what he thinks or what he did or show the video or...
When we come back, that's where we're going to pick it up. You know, there was, you know, Larkin did time, and he wanted to make a point. I mean, it was, you know, I don't think it was a big, giant surprise we were going to go through this process, but I get the impression Larkin was thinking long term. Well, that's what we're going to spend time on, because long term is a-coming. It's not long term anymore. We'll be right back.
And now, live. From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and we have my special guest, Larkin Rose, on. And, you know, I want to go back. We got the time, so I want to go back to the beginning. You know, let's go ahead and talk, Larkin. You got involved in, I mean, you have a wife and children, correct?
Only one child, but sometimes she seems like more than that.
Yeah. So we have a family, and you took on the battle with the IRS on more of a philosophical basis. Just, you know, just take this segment to talk about that. And you really were very public about it. You were very instructive about it. You were educating people about it. You were pressing what issue. I mean, it's more than just the issue. It was their response to it and how, I don't know, legal the legal system is. You know, go ahead and walk us through that real quick.
Right. The underlying legal reason that we stopped filing was a technical legal reason based on what the tax laws actually say, which is basically international trade is subject to the tax and domestic, purely domestic trade isn't. But what I did from the beginning, first of all, I wanted to be the guinea pig. I wanted them to come after me. And at the same time, I was telling everybody else, hey, everybody, don't do this, because I wasn't trying to stay out of trouble. I mean, I ran full page ads saying, dear federal government, please prosecute me. And then explaining that I wasn't filing and saying why. The reason for doing that, the reason for making it public, was to basically say, look, whether I win or lose, I want you to watch what your government does to me and see if it doesn't make you kind of reconsider what you thought about it as the public protector and the agent of justice and the defender of freedom and yada, yada, yada. And even though I lost, the feds did a marvelous job of showing what a bunch of lying, thieving thugs they are by cheating every way they possibly could to imprison someone that the prosecution and the judge knew hadn't even violated the law. Now, again, there are people who are actual tax protesters who say, this is immoral, I'm not going to pay it. And, you know, more power to them. I completely philosophically agree with that. That just isn't what I was doing. I was saying, look, your own rules say this, and had meetings with the IRS, and they said, we're not really sure why it says that. We'll get back to you. And they got back to us, quote unquote, a couple years later by having a dozen armed IRS thugs invade our home.
Well, I remember them talking about this during that time, and it went like this. You want our answer to these questions? Our answer is going to be enforcement. I remember them saying that.
It was Terry Lemons, IRS spokesperson, who actually said, our answer can be seen in our enforcement actions. I mean, nice mentality.
No. Like, it was very instructive. And,
yeah.
You know, you first.
I wonder, you know, how far are they going to expand that? If somebody walks into their office and says, am I allowed to deduct this expense? Or are they just going to hit him over the head with a bat? There's your answer. Bam!
Well, how are you dealing with the IRS now? You're back to filing? What are you doing?
Well, I have a secret trick, which is being so dang poor that I don't owe them anything, which is not a trick I'd like to continue.
Oh, that's been my trick for a long time.
At the moment, we've been filing, and we've been so poor that they get nothing anyway. If we get out of that, I'm not sure what's going to happen.
We'll leave it at that.
Decide when that choice comes up. And that's the thing is, when it comes to resisting the thuggery, if one person recognizes tyranny as tyranny, he's in big trouble. Like, either he's going to put up with it and be oppressed, or he's going to resist and be dead. Neither of them is a particularly good option. But that's why my focus, even during the tax thing, was to have people learn what's actually going on. And in that case, it was mostly legal issues. Just, you know, watch what happens. You know, we hear all the propaganda about our system of justice, and you get your day in court, and we have due process, and yada, yada, yada. All the BS that completely falls by the wayside the moment that the power system of the control freaks is actually in trouble. Because if I had won, and the IRS knew this, the Department of Justice knew this, and the judge knew this, if I had won being that in their face in public and saying, I'm not filing and here's why, it had to make national news, you know, and they'd spin it as here's this horrible, nasty tax cheat and all that. But they couldn't risk people hearing about, you mean somebody didn't file and told them and nothing happened?
Well, what is it that you were hoping to accomplish? What did you accomplish? And I really do want to get into the support of your wife, and because she had to go to jail too.
Yep.
So
yep.
What's been her, and what kind of impact did that? You know, so many questions. Let's go ahead and start off one at a time. Your wife's support of what you were doing manifested in what way? She just total support or, okay, whatever, you're the man? I mean, what?
It was, that's an area that I couldn't possibly have been any luckier in. You know, of course, she wasn't thrilled about going to prison, wasn't thrilled about risking that and going up against them and that, but she understands the philosophy of freedom just as much as I do, and she advocates it just as much as I do. You know, the only question for either one of us is, at what point is it worth it to stand in front of the tyrant to hopefully make a difference? You know, at what point are you just getting yourself killed, and at what point are you actually doing some good? But she was completely supportive the whole way. You know, there's a difference between being unsupportive and being scared. You know, we were both scared at times and less scared at other times. But, you know, I can't even imagine having known this and fought this and having been married to somebody who said, oh, we should pay our fair share and give back to society. You know, if it was somebody philosophically who didn't get the point, it wouldn't have happened.
How old is your child?
She's now 13. When we got raided, she was 9, I believe. 6, sorry.
Now, this has to have some kind of impact on her perspective of government. Does she feel she's in a, you know, occupied regime, or is she kind of when I move out, I'm going to become the best collectivist ever? I mean, you know, what's her thought on it?
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, I've been sort of wondering what it's going to look like to have a kid who's rebellious against anarchist parents. You know, what's to rebel against? But she, I think the fact that she had heard us talk about the IRS before, you know, she was only 6, so how much understanding would she have? But that we talk about, yeah, there's this huge gang of thieves and it steals money from everybody and they're not going to like it when we do this. And so that when they did the raid, of course, it was a very scary event, and people who haven't had their home invaded by armed thugs, there's no words I can say to make people know all the way what that's really like.
That's one thing, Larkin, when we come back, you know, we'll go ahead and talk about the legal, it's just a little bit. I mean, it's just, you know, you challenge them with their own laws. You say it doesn't say that. Yeah? Well, we got a gun. You know, so this is, we'll get into that a little bit. But, you know, things have progressed since then. A cultural awareness that happened, a lot of it due to Larkin Rose and his wife's efforts. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And I want to make sure that we're, get enough history here so we can talk about what's coming, because we need a foundation. We need a foundation that's going to give an understanding of people that are, I wouldn't say in the lead, but in the front, the tip of the spear in a lot of this stuff. And Larkin Rose is a very respected individual that's doing what he can to make sure that his fellow human beings are aware. And he really does a great job, and we're proud to have him on Freedom's Phoenix whenever we get a chance. And I can encourage you to keep posting there, because you give such a good voice to what this really is about. And it's about how many minds can we free? And you're doing a great job in that. And when you have the IRS kicking in the door, you have individual human beings that are doing this. So my question is, as you're dealing with the IRS and you're dealing with prosecutors and judges and employees of the government, and you're showing them exactly what they're doing, they're not even obeying their own rules, and they used a heavy hand of "we can" to get a comply or die thing, I'm wondering, do you get any kind of a sense of humanity from them? They're feeling guilty about what they're doing, or they just don't care, or they just want to keep their job, or are they even worth attempting to save? Or, give me that perspective.
Well, that's funny, because that ties in exactly with the book of mine that just came out called The Most Dangerous Superstition, which is about what the belief in authority and government does to people. And all these people, the dozen or so that invaded our house, and the judge who flung me in prison for 15 months, and all them, there's a whole range of personalities, of course, just like there is with everybody else. Some of them seem to enjoy lording power over other people. They're just stupid thugs and bullies. And some of them seem to just sort of be doing a job, and sometimes almost seem to feel bad about, gosh, I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to do it to you anyway. But what they all have in common is that none of them accept responsibility for their actions. They all believe that they're acting on behalf of this mythical, magical entity called government, and that absolves them of any responsibility. So they don't see it as, I'm a guy with a gun breaking into somebody's house because he said stuff. They see it as, I'm a law enforcer, and that's all that matters.
Wow. And so there's no redeeming. This is my point. I've always said this for, over a decade. I go, in the end, as this starts to wind down, whatever, there are going to be, if not literal, certainly metaphorical, guillotine lines. There are going to be people that are going to be targeted by others as having destroyed them in their lives. And I don't want to, one, don't want to be in the line. And two, I don't want to be at the lever of the guillotine or mess. I don't even want to be anywhere near it, man. I'm over here. I'm the love guy,
Right.
but it's going to happen. And I just got off the phone before the show with a representative of the Phoenix Police Department. We have another event that we're doing next week. It's going to, not make some people happy, but it's legal. We do it. We have these cards, and we have a thing called wallet voting. We're doing promoting silver as exchange and so on, following a lot of what you talked about in Iron Web. Now, what we're doing, get some attention to it and some goodwill with the public, is we're going out to all the parking meters, and it has a graphic that has a guy putting something in a parking meter with a circle with a slash through it. And the slogan is, we fed your meter so you don't feed the state and, getting a ticket. Well, in some communities, it's illegal to do that, to feed someone else's meter. Well, here it's, and I called the play. I said, "No, here we go Tuesday, because Monday's a holiday." I go, "Tuesday, man, we're going to be all over this. We're going to end the gun show this weekend." I go to Tucson, and we're giving out these cards. Get on, get all aboard the Silver Bullet, the love train, okay? And it's all about being able to have a chart on what silver's worth, and the old uncirculated silver, the dimes that are worth a couple dollars now, and so on, to start in their transactions at the, you know, silver for bullets, you know, the silver bullet. Well, who shoots silver bullets? Lone Ranger. So we have, you know, morphed Ron Paul into the Lone Ranger, and Tonto is Rand or something. And then we have, you know, what do the silver bullets kill? Oh, a werewolf. So who do? We morph, you know, Bernanke into the werewolf, represent the Federal Reserve. And so, you know, we just have some fun with this. Well, one of the things is, you know, we know that fines and penalties and all kinds of stuff are getting amped up, and it's just, it's going to get bad. And when the pensions start going on all these municipal employees, including the police, and they know it. I mean, we've had conversations that said, I mean, you know, this is done, right? So it's at least going to be, even if you get it, it's going to be inflated away. So you need us on your side. You need to be seen, or at least portrayed in the perception, that the Phoenix police are there to protect our rights, that you're the white hat, not the black hat. So we do everything we can to do that, to hold it off as long as we can, because I know it's going to get violent. It's going to get nasty. And we need to try and at least be, you know, open to keeping this peaceful, because I had Jack McLamb on early this week. And I remember in the 90s, he was like the original Oath Keeper. He was the guy saying, you know, the police and the military are going to be the tip of the spear on this thing. It's going to be, you know, United Nations or federal or whatever. It's going to be, you know, the Lord and leaders of on high. And as time has gone on, and certainly the last couple of years with Dr. Paul's run for the presidency, all of a sudden, for the first time in our history, the Federal Reserve became understood by a ever-increasing number of people to see who our masters really are. And the IRS has just been the enforcement collecting gun of the Federal Reserve. And when you did your thing and you demonstrate what's going on, you have to look at the system and ask, is the system repairable? Should we have any respect for the criminal justice system at all? What's your opinion?
No, we shouldn't. In fact, we shouldn't even have faith that there can be such a thing as a servant government. And the solution is that all those people who are out there committing thuggery in the name of the state, in the name of law, in the name of government, you know, people wearing badges, whether they're IRS or local cops or even soldiers overseas, the solution, and the only solution as far as I'm concerned, is to get them to give up the notion that they are that they're not responsible for their actions as private individuals. Just say, would you be doing this exact thing, whether it's kicking down my door, you know, doing an armed invasion of my house, or pulling someone over because he doesn't have a little sticker on his license plate, or stealing somebody's house because he didn't give money to the extortionist, whatever it is, would you, Mr. Enforcer, be doing this if you didn't have a law and a badge, or would you know darn well that it's evil if you didn't have the law and the badge? Because if you grasp that it's just as evil whether or not you have a law or a badge, the vast majority of people out there doing this thuggery wouldn't do it anymore. They don't do it on their own. They don't do it because they thought it up. They do it because they view, quote-unquote, law enforcement as a noble goal, just as the Nazis did, just as the enforcers of Stalin and Mao and all the rest of them did. Hey, we're doing this for our country and law and order and against the enemies of the people and yada, yada, yada. If there's a redeeming factor, like you were talking about, of whether it's IRS agents or any other state enforcers, state mercenaries, it's that hardly any, if any of them, would be doing these things on their own. They are only doing it because they have been led to believe that if there's politician scribbles, legislation, law, that says it's okay, then it must be. And they so deeply believe that they will consistently do things that in their hearts they know they're completely wrong, completely unjustified, but they think, well, it's law and that makes it okay.
When we come back, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to read just a couple of paragraphs
of Larkin's article that really had an impact on, you know, a lot of things. And he makes it very clear, and a lot of people are very supportive, and it's harsh. It's harsh words. When we come back, I'll get to that, and you'll understand why they are concerned.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what are we fighting for? Well, we fed your meter, so you didn't feed the state some minutes of free parking from walletvoting.com. Now, you know, you guys go to the top of freedomsphoenix.com right now, and you'll see it. And here's the other one. You know, oh, this goes to the gun shows right here. Let me see if I can get this in there for you guys to see it. You know, what it has is an invitation for them to learn about silver and so on. Now, on the back of it, you know, let me put that up there. You go and you can get the printout of this on the site. And it shows what the conversion is for various different older coins that used to be 90% silver. And a lot of this is a philosophy that you get from Larkin. He's kind of come to this on his own, too. And there's a whole community out here. And, in fact, where Larkin and I actually got to meet in person, we were in New Hampshire at Porkfest. And you had hundreds of people out there in a big camping area near the border of Canada. And they were trading everything in silver. You know, everything was valued in silver also. I mean, you know, I guess some people were using some dollars, but there's all kinds of silver just going on everywhere. Now, I want to read, get that out of the way. I wanted to read part of Larkin's article, and he did make a disclaimer in the beginning, and I'll go ahead and read that. And it said, let me start with a disclaimer. I say what I mean. If what I actually say offends you, and for a lot of people it will, then you probably need offending. But don't bother being offended at things I didn't say, but which you imagine I meant. If I meant it, I would have said it. Larkin Rhodes, you can't get, you know, clearer than that. Now, the one thing that it was that really probably hit a lot of people was that we're talking about the death of Ms. Gifford. I mean, being shot. Ms. Gifford was, you know, her being shot was not a huge national tragedy any more than the hundreds of other murders that happened the same day. Mrs. Gifford was not a great public servant. In fact, she was not a public servant at all. She was not serving you or me or anyone else. Other than the elite ruling class, she did not represent the people. She was a member of the parasitic American ruling class. She was not working for the people. What she did, along with her fellow political parasites, was use the threat of violence to subjugate, control, and extort the general public. Like every other member of Congress, she produced nothing of value, neither product nor service. As a legislator, her entire job consisted of coming up with new ways to use coercion of law to forcibly control you and me, and use the products of our efforts to serve the agenda of the parasitic class. Did she mean well? How should I know? And frankly, I don't particularly care. As far as I can tell, Hitler meant well, and so did many of the thugs who carried out his megalomaniacal ideas. Did that make him good? Did that make it a national tragedy when he died? No. The tragedy was that a human being could ever imagine that forcibly subjugating the human race is the way to make a better society. Whatever her intentions, it was a bigger tragedy that Mrs. Gifford ever became a member of the professional criminal class than it was that she was shot. If I ever suddenly decide to embrace the love of dominion and seek to use brute force to dominate and subjugate innocent people, I hope someone does me the favor of shooting me. Well, Larkin, do we have to worry about you running for office or becoming a legislator?
I highly doubt it.
Wow. I mean, these are strong words, but it really put it, and I encourage you to go read the rest of the article, and it's The Gifford Shooting Unpleasant Truth is the title of the article, and it's on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix towards the bottom where the articles are, and I encourage you to read it because it just makes it very clear what this really is about. Can you summarize it for us in your own words for me?
Basically, there is one error that when I started writing it, the media was still reporting that Ms. Giffords was dead, and turns out she wasn't. So that article still talks as if she was, at least for the first half. But the general gist is people not only view those in government as royalty, and they talk about them as our representatives and doing work for us, and they've been trained to see it that way, but that is not at all even close to what literally happens. What the people in government do is make up threats, and they call them legislation, and they have these big rituals, and they wear nice clothes and use big words to describe their threats of violence against you and me. And we're not supposed to notice that it's violence. Of course, everybody knows that if you break their so-called laws, they do nasty things to you. And men with guns come and do nasty things to you. I've seen that firsthand. For anyone who doesn't think that really happens, try it out. See what happens. And the view that, we lost this great champion of the people. You can't be a champion of the people if your job consists of extorting and bossing the people around. And that's what politicians do. It's all they do. That is their job description, to forcibly control the rest of us. And the notion that they do that for our benefit is insane. The notion that they're our servants. Like, if you're, to put it in the most simple terms, if someone bosses you around and takes your money, he's not your servant. If he doesn't boss you around and take your money, he's not government. You can't be both. They're opposites.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about your next book. I would imagine it follows this theme, The Most Dangerous Superstition. What is the most dangerous superstition?
Basically, the belief in authority, which includes all belief in government. And by that, I mean the belief that any ritual, any election, any constitution, any document, anything that people can do can actually give to a group of people the right to rule others. And that, even though we're taught that, government is what makes us civilized and laws are what make us be humans instead of these vicious animals, people talk about law and order as if that's what we should be going for. And they're taught that basically universal subservience to this ruling class is what makes humanity. And it's the exact diametrical opposite of the truth. That what we're doing when we believe in authority is saying the rules of morality, of right and wrong, they don't apply to those people over there. I'm not allowed to steal. You're not allowed to steal. Your listeners aren't allowed to steal. But the people in government, we did these weird rituals, and they somehow acquired the right to steal. I'm not allowed to tell you what you can smoke and drag you out of your house at gunpoint if you disobey me. What you can smoke, what you can eat, where you can work, any of the 8 zillion choices that quote-unquote laws affect. I don't have the right to forcibly control your behavior like that. You don't have the right to control mine, but everybody, or nearly everybody in the country, has been thoroughly indoctrinated to actually accept the notion that there are human beings who, because of certain pseudo-religious political rituals, have acquired the right to do something which would be completely evil if I did it, or if you did it, or if one of your listeners did it.
Well, your book, is it a novel? Is it fiction? Is it just your mind? I mean, what are we going to get when we read The Most Dangerous Superstition?
This one's not a novel. This one is basically anti-political philosophy. It shows why authority in government is a superstition. It's not a rational construct. It's not just a way to organize. It's not just a sort of a means of getting along and making things run smoothly. It's actually a faith-based superstition that has no rationality underlying it and is actually provably bogus.
Well,
you can logically prove.
If you get someone to pull a sword Excalibur out of a rock and a pope to bless him and somebody to vote for him or whatever. Well, then can we make him, you know, rule everybody? I mean, you know, I know where you're going with this, and I understand it, and I'm interested, when we come back in the next hour, how this philosophy has been embraced and is growing, and where will it go? I'm getting ready, man. I'm getting mobile. A year from now, I don't know where I'm going to be, but I'm going to be ready to be there, wherever it is, because I think it's going to start getting really bad. We'll talk about Larkin, where he's staying, where he's at, who he's doing it with, what his plans for the future are, and how he sees this devolving. And can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? I think we're there. Can we leave yet? Well, hopefully we can. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with Larkin Rose in just a little bit. This is Ernest Hancock. I'm publisher of freedomsphoenix.com and the radio talk show host of Declare Your Independence. Now, I want to give you my personal endorsement of a wealthy U.S. citizen that is predicting that in 2011, we will witness the most important day in America in more than 50 years. He's produced a video for you. It's a real eye-opener, and I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to watch it. www.endofamerica1and7.com. endofamerica17.com. This video has the history of how we got where we are now and where we're going and why. Now, it's a lengthy video. It'll be about 20 minutes, but you need to watch this so you understand what's going to happen to this country and how you can protect your wealth and even benefit financially. Now, you go there. It's free. I want you to watch this video. You need to have this information so that you can survive the economic collapse that's coming to America. It's not if, it's when. That's End of America, the numbers 1and7.com. After you watch it, you'll understand why I endorsed it.